Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Circe Podcast Network. I'm Joshua Gibbs, and this is Proverbial, the podcast where we explore the wisdom of the ages as it comes to us in Proverbs, by which I mean wise sayings a man may live by, if he's not so arrogant as to think himself special. Episode 136, Pretend It's a School. Today's proverb comes from Edmund Burke. I'll read it twice. The age of chivalry is gone. Once more. The age of chivalry is gone. Now, this is not normally the way that we refer to the end of chivalry. We have this more concise way of describing the end of chivalry. And it is, chivalry is dead. This is the thing people say whenever men treat women poorly, whenever women rely too much on physical charms to attract the attention of a man in a public place and it becomes egregious and embarrassing, whenever men pursue in a flagrant sort of way and in a public sort of way the most unvirtuous of women, we say chivalry is dead. Normally, chivalry is dead is a thing we say in reference to the failure of men and women to treat one another well. Chivalry is dead. This is a thing people say to explain the world. Why is the world the way that it is? Why do women treat men badly? Why do men treat women badly? Well, it's because chivalry is dead. Which is an interesting sort of explanation for why men and women treat each other badly. Chivalry is dead is a thing that's often said flippantly. And it's said so often, it's not really treated like a real theory of why men and women treat each other badly. It's not taken seriously. It's more of a joke. It's more of a punchline. And that's fine. There are many proverbs that are punchlines. Maybe punchlines turn into proverbs. Maybe proverbs turn into punchlines. Anyway, it's not unfair for a proverb to be a punchline, but chivalry is dead. This is a thing we say to lament just how badly men and women treat each other, but also just how badly people treat each other. Because chivalry was not only concerned with how men and women treated each other. It was also concerned with how everyone treats each other. Edmund Burke makes this claim, the age of chivalry is gone. In the midst of reflections on the revolution in France, when he's discussing the materialist philosophy of the French Revolution, of the Enlightenment. And he sets up chivalry as the opposite of materialism, which is really kind of interesting, the longer you think about it. That the opposite of materialism is this code of manners that was invented. Chivalry is not natural, it's supernatural. And it's based on a high view of what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman. The age of chivalry is gone, and the age of science has come to take its place. Chivalry is not scientific. Chivalry is the product of imagination. It's the product of fantasy. And that might sound like a kind of unusual claim, but find the passages in Reflections on the Revolution in France that pertain to chivalry. And you'll find that Burke describes it as artificial. And he doesn't use that term derisively, but he means it was imagined, it was dreamed up. Knights, lords, ladies, kings themselves, this was all imaginary. It was the product of a moral imagination. And Burke is well known for this turn of phrase, the moral imagination. And it's a undervalued, underexplored idea among American conservatives. Most American conservatives refer to the moral imagination and simply mean by the term a desire to be moral or a moral framework for the world. But when you actually get back to the source of this term, and it is Edmund Burke, you find that the moral imagination is the product of fantasy. It's not the product of science. It's not, strictly speaking, born of scripture any more than the Lord of the Rings is born of scripture. The connection, if there is one, is tenuous. What is the moral imagination then? And why is it that the age of chivalry is a thing it's fitting to describe as dead? How is it that the imagination, the product of an imagination, can die? Well, I've come to this passage in Burke's Reflections recently in my in-person classes that I teach and in some classes that I teach online. And this claim, the age of chivalry is gone, struck me in a very different way than it ever had before, because I finally saw the whole thing in context. The concept of chivalry dying in the context of the moral imagination. So I want to talk about the moral imagination as the thing that makes chivalry possible and what it means that chivalry is dead, what it means that the age of chivalry is gone. There's not a whole lot of place left in the life of the American adult for fantasy or for a kind of high productive imagination. We all have jobs. We're all addicted to the news. And there's not much place for fantasy which is left. We have in our memories, sometimes within the ongoing experience of our life, but more in our memories, events wherein fantasy played out in a grand sort of way. So I want to start by explaining this fantasy, the fantasy of chivalry, by asking you to think about a Halloween party. I'll offer another example in just a minute. Halloween's not my favorite holiday, but Halloween's kind of a great way of beginning. So consider a Halloween party for a moment. At a Halloween party, everyone dresses up, and you dress up in a comic way or in a macabre way. And oftentimes at a Halloween party, the macabre is the theme of the evening. There are cupcakes that have tombstones on top of them. Spooky music is played, spooky decorations are put up, and everyone agrees at a Halloween party that both the macabre and the scary, or the startling, are fair game. And so if you get startled or scared at a Halloween party, the fact that you went to the party means you kind of signed up for it. You can't blame someone for scaring you at a Halloween party. It's part of the deal. And everyone dresses up. Everyone dresses up in a way that they would not normally dress up. At a dress-up party, everyone has to dress up, and everyone dresses up unusual. And when everyone dresses up unusual, what counts as unusual is kind of shifted. So an unusual, a truly unusual costume at a Halloween party is no costume at all. That's going to draw attention to yourself. If you show up in a Halloween, or if you show up at a Halloween party without a costume on, that's going to be unusual. Usual means something different at a Halloween party. So this is one of those reasons why if you show up without a costume at a Halloween party, people are going to, they're going to razz you about it. Because the Halloween party is more enjoyable if everyone does the unusual thing. The aesthetics of the Halloween party also have to be in keeping with the comic macabre nature of the costumes. And so if you show up at a Halloween party, you're expecting not only the costumes to be unusual, you're not only expecting everyone to look other than they normally look, but you're expecting everyone to abide by this different set of social rules, what is and is not acceptable. If everyone at the Halloween party dresses in the costume, and if the food and the music and the decor fit the costumes and everything hangs together and everything harmonizes with everything else, it's possible to invoke this sort of separate kind of mood at a Halloween party. If we all agree on different rules, and we all agree that the rules will determine how we dress and what we eat and what we talk and what's considered polite or impolite, it's almost like you can invoke this other world. You can bring in this other world that's not yours, that's apart from your world, and it's a fantasy. A Halloween party is this very mild, very simple kind of fantasy. And you take it up for a short time, and then the party's over, and you put your costume away, and you go back to normal life, where food is normal, and music is normal, and the rules that govern our interactions with each other are normal. And everything's normal again. There's something sort of similar that goes on at formal events. When I say formal events, really the thing that comes first to mind here is like a high protocol dinner that you might stage for high school students. Like I used to have many times, 9th through 12th grade, back when I was in high school, at a classical Christian school. We had protocol. We didn't have prom, we had protocol. And in preparation for protocol, we got manners training. Everyone that was going would sit through this series of lectures on the etiquette of fine dining. And we would learn all about working from the outside in, so far as your flatware was concerned. We learned how to butter a roll. We learned how to sip soup. We learned how to cut a piece of meat apart in a formal way. And we got some sort of advice and training on polite conversation at a formal event. We learned about different styles of dress, what was implied by black tie versus white tie, formal versus casual. And then we would dress up and we would go to dinner. And it was great. Now, there was something a bit fantastic about the whole thing. We were pretending. The manners that accompanied protocol were pretend. We were pretending, how about this? We were pretending that these things matter. And in pretending that they mattered, we had fun in doing them. There was delight in doing things that we pretended mattered. When you attend a formal event, there is a kind of, it's a kind of a work of imagination. None of it is necessary. You're pretending that it's necessary. Think about the rules that govern a wedding. Like the kind of clothing that you can and cannot wear to a wedding if you're in attendance, the sort of clothing that the bride and the groom are supposed to wear. And then all of the conventions of a wedding, in terms of the ceremony, all the things that have to happen at the reception. Now, while I love all that stuff, and while I want my children to have very traditional weddings, I'm comfortable saying that a lot of the rules that govern formal events are a kind of pretend. And I don't use that term derisively. We are pretending to be the kind of people who need to behave this way. We're pretending to be the kind of people for whom it is fitting to behave this way, even if there's nothing formal about the rest of our lives. Let's pretend. Let's pretend that we are, ladies and gentlemen, let's pretend that we are these dignified, important people. You're often abiding by rules of formal behavior at a party with this kind of like grin on your face. And sometimes you even call attention to, well, it's a formal event. I guess I should be working from the outside in with these forks and knives and spoon. I'm going to tear off a piece of my roll, one biteful, butter it, and then eat the whole bite because that's what you're supposed to do. And it's pretend. You know the rules. If you know how to engage a formal event, you know the rules of a pretend thing. So I offer these two examples, the Halloween party and the formal event. I offer these examples of ways that adults engage in the fantasy of something like chivalry. The age of chivalry, though, didn't last as long. It wasn't as centralized as a formal event or a Halloween party. So imagine a Halloween party. Imagine the logic, the imaginary logic of the Halloween party, not just being this thing that occurs at a Halloween party. Imagine that imaginary logic being everywhere. Imagine the rules that govern a formal evening, not beginning with a formal evening and ending when everyone goes home. Imagine that everyone lives within the realm of the formal fantasy. That's chivalry. Chivalry is this game of pretend that Christian civilization was involved in for 1,000 years. It was a game of dress-up that lasted for an entire millennium. And it was ennobling. It was ennobling to pretend to be noble. That's what the fantasy of chivalry was. Pretend it's really something special to be a man. Pretend it's really special to be a woman. Pretend it's something amazing. Pretend it's something divine to be a woman or a man. Pretend human civilization is this glorious thing. Pretend it's glorious. Pretend it's divine. Maybe if we all pretend that it's really something to be a man, and that it's really something to be a woman, and that human relationships and civilization itself, if we pretend that it's all amazing, maybe it'll be amazing. Maybe we can pretend that church and state are splendid things. Maybe we can get back a little bit. Maybe we can get back to the Garden of Eden, the purest expression of church and state. Adam walks with God in the cool of the day. He is given dominion over the earth. We lost that. We lost that, and we've been trying to get it back ever since. And chivalry was this amazing, effective, like transportive, imaginary enterprise where we got it all back. Kind of. It was a fantasy that was connected with a reality, this lost reality. It was sort of like playing house in reverse, right? Little children play house looking forward to playing house. Chivalry was like playing house looking back on playing house. Let's pretend Adam and Eve. Let's play Adam and Eve. Let's play Adam in the garden. And maybe we can reach back in time and pull this Edenic state forward. And if we do the fantasy right, maybe it won't be a fantasy. But then the Enlightenment happens. And one of the consistent claims of the Enlightenment about all the manners that constituted chivalry was, it's pretend, it's not real. Be real, be realistic. A man is just a trousered ape. That's it. It's not something amazing to be a human being. Civilization is not something amazing. Civilization is a necessary evil. It was better. It was better back in the state of nature when we all lived simply. And the best thing we can possibly do now is try to achieve that same simplicity by stripping back all the layers of artifice until we get to bone dry bone underneath all of it. Roger Scruton once said, "The consolation of imaginary things is not imaginary." You might say that chivalry was this imaginary consolation that was somehow real. Like, imagine for a moment. Imagine the consolation that comes with the right game of pretend. Like, imagine you live in a home with a bratty little kid who's 6 or 7 years old and just takes pride in mucking things up for everyone. The 7-year-old child who's a spoiler, who loves to spoil things. Petulant, petty, throws a fit whenever he doesn't get his way. Must be the center of attention at all times. Imagine that you live in a home with such a child. And that one day the mother in the household, who has tried everything, spanking the child, timeouts. She's read books on disciplining a child. I mean, none of it works. Imagine none of it works. She's tried everything. The carrot and the stick. One day, she finishes wrapping a present for a friend. And she's got this leftover cardboard tube from the wrapping paper. And this bratty little kid comes in, being a brat. And she says, "Here, sire, is your scepter. And she hands this bratty little 7-year-old kid this empty tube of wrapping paper. Here, sire, is your scepter. And the kid takes the scepter and he kind of stares at it. And he had barged into the room, but he walks away circumspectly, staring at this thing in his hand. And about an hour later, he comes down the stairs. Normally, he comes running down the stairs. But now he comes calmly and evenly down the stairs, and he's holding this cardboard tube like a scepter. And he's not screaming, and he's not yelling. And he walks into the living room and says to his mother, who's reading a book, "Good afternoon, mother." And he says it in like a kind of faux regal sounding voice. Maybe he even attempts a very bad English accent. And the mother says, "Good afternoon, Your Highness." And he says, "Mother, may I request a cup of juice?" She says, "Yes, Your Majesty." She gets up and pours him a cup of juice she pours the juice into a china cup with a saucer and hands it to him. And he sits at the table politely sipping it, saying nothing. His mother has never seen him this way, not even once. And when he is done, he delivers the cup and the saucer to the kitchen, and he walks calmly away, again carrying his scepter. And this is the inauguration of this new way of life for this kid. Like, every day when he wakes up, he gets this cardboard tube. And he pretends that he's a king, and he's a pleasant person to be around. Like, all of a sudden, we gave him this pretend scepter, and now he's pretending to be a king, and it's delightful. He behaves like a king. He pretends to be a king. And in his pretending to be a king, he's a charmer. And his mother and his father are both baffled and delighted by this turnaround in his behavior. And it goes on for weeks. And where there was chaos and violence in the home, now there's peace. It's wonderful. And then one day, this kid's older brother comes home from college. And he's not 10 seconds in the door before this kid walks up to him and says, "Greetings, my dear brother." And the older brother grabs that tube from his hand, bonks him on the head and says, "Quit playing with me." And the spell is broken. Kid runs away screaming. His mother's like, "What did you do?" The older brother's like, "He's not a king." The mother says, if you knew how lucky we were to get him to pretend. Now he's going back to the reality of it. And the reality of it is that he's a brat. It was great there for a little while. It was great when we could get him to pretend to be a king. When he pretended to be a king, he was truly tolerable. Pretend king, real peace. But the spell is broken. The age of chivalry is gone. And now we will no longer pretend to be lords and ladies. Now we will no longer pretend to be kings and queens. We will no longer pretend that kings and queens are real. Now we are all taken back to this basic, primitive, 2001, A Space Odyssey-like, monkey violence sort of state. And this is where we've been caught for the last 200 years, in the reality of it all. And the only way that we're going to get back is if we're willing to pretend.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.